Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Nathan Rivard with the North Dakota National Guard Public Affairs Office. Today we have a great guest joining us, Lieutenant Colonel Jared Simic. He is currently the battalion commander of the 1st Engineer Training Battalion at Camp Grafton. And full-time, he serves as the North Dakota State Partnership Program Director. Colonel Simic, thanks for coming on the show.
Happy to be here, Nate. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, A nice North Dakota day, so
yes,
no complaints
it's
there.
It's hot.
Yeah, it's better than winter.
Yes.
You know? So before we jump into your main role as the State Partnership Program Director, I'm going to go into a little background of your military career. So
yeah,
you started about 25 years ago. You enlisted as a combat engineer in 2000. Mm-hmm. You deployed in 2004, commissioned in 2006, another deployment in 2009. And then you did a handful of battalion and brigade staff positions before ultimately serving in Africa and Europe since 2020. So you did about 4 years there, and then you returned to North Dakota and 2024. So extremely broad brush strokes, but we want to like paint that in and just take us from the beginning of, you know, what got you in, why you keep serving, why you took the path you did.
Yeah. So I'll try to be, brief, but you know, 25 years, I guess it's out there. I don't know where the time went, but, as you allude to, I enlisted in 2000 as a combat engineer, a ton of family history of the military. So, my dad was in the Marine Corps. So like the one guidance from him was like, you can join any component except for the Marine Corps. So I'm like, easy enough. So I wanted to stay in the Guard, love the Guard. And then had some friends in the Guard and they're like, hey, you got to check this out. So it was literally one of those bring your buddy to drill things before even like their recruit training companies. And so I remember just going there on a drill weekend and Dickinson, Charlie Company 164 days, like shorts and a t-shirt running around in APCs 113s. I'm like, this is awesome. So like they had me hook, line, and sinker. So I was out there, did boot camp, did all that fun stuff, AIT as a combat engineer. Stayed out at Dickinson there at Charlie Company. And then about 4 years later in 04, I was approached actually on a split drill weekend by my commander. He's like, hey, they're looking for some engineers to go with the 34th ID to Kosovo. So that was for 5 Bravo. So they took 5 of us from the state. There was an 04 who took lead on that. Snagged us up. We ran the Mine Action Center out there in Kosovo. It was great. And I was kind of one of those typical E4 guys where I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to do my initial term, kind of get out. But he was a great mentor. He's like, hey, you got some potential. I'm like, well, I guess that makes one of us. And then, so he's like, yeah, you should really apply for an ROTC scholarship, do all that stuff. And I'm like, I didn't really know what ROTC was because we pushed OCS so hard in the state. So that's kind of where my mind was at. So did that. Got selected for a GRFD, Simul Membership Program, and got selected. So I did that, did a couple more years at NDSU, commissioned in 06, branched engineer. I was enlisted engineer, so I'm like, yeah, I want to stay in the engineer world. So commissioned in 06, and then I became a platoon leader for DET 1 Company A, and that was with 142 when it was still around back in the Lisbon days over there, and had a blast as a platoon leader. And then going into that assignment, a couple of years later, that's when essentially the whole state got mobbed and picked up for Kosovo. I think that was 12 Bravo was a rotation for that one. So got picked up to serve as the Company XO for Company B231, the BSB. Again, not around anymore, but had a great experience out there serving in that role. And then came back from that into Company Command for Alpha Company 231. And so now I was kind of outside of the engineer world, and now I'm in the logistics world. So I had to go to get my career course done on the logistics side, which was pretty common practice, kind of still is, that you get dual branched. So you're more marketable. And that's when we had the BSB, so it kind of made a lot of sense. So while I was in command, I got approached again to look at a ROTC gig as an assistant professor of military science. I thought it was at NDSU, so I was like, yeah, let's do it. I remember when I got the orders cut, they're like, UND. I'm like, what? You know, behind enemy lines? So it was actually a really awesome job. It was kind of fun to be back in that college environment. So I served as the battalion XO for the Fighting Sioux battalion. Can I say that?
At the time, that's what it was.
Yeah, now Fighting Hawks. So that's accurate. Great time doing that. I did that for 2-3 years on ADOS, and then I jumped over to the 68 Troop Command. Had to start doing some of those kind of staff development positions. So I did that as an S4. And then also following that assignment, I was an assistant S3 plans officer at the MEB. So, and kind of when you're in those like low tempo, still busy, you kind of focus on your PME. So that's when I was doing like my ILE and AOC and all that fun stuff as well. And then kind of total left field, chief of staff called me one day, said, hey, Major Simic, we're going to send you out to the ADA. And I'm like, what in the world? What are you talking about? Because that was like the one place you just didn't really like look behind the curtain or ever think about, because it was such a unique assignment. But they sent me out there as the battalion S3, and I loved it, actually. I drank the Kool-Aid hard, you know, I was first to fire, did all that fun stuff, and loved it. Learned a lot about, you know, the ADA, obviously not growing up through it, but just learning how they're employed and all that stuff, and learning about the NCR mission, that was really cool. So I really did enjoy that. So again, more education, had to do an ADA transition course, you know, and then triple branched, here we go. Do you get a t-shirt for that? I don't know. So when I was in that position, I know I'm being brief, that's when I got approached about, hey, would you be interested in this bilateral affairs officer position over in West Africa? I knew we had a state partnership program, but I didn't know a whole lot about it. But I was interested because I always like a good adventure. But there's a lot to think about because it's an accompanied tour. You bring your family, kids, it's a whole thing. So after a lot of consideration, I applied for that and got selected. So shout out there in 2020. I did that through 2023. It's an awesome tour, probably the best and most rewarding assignment by a mile of just the stuff we do there as far as broadening goes. So it was amazing. So in 2023, my job was up. They announced it. Major Beth Simic, who those don't know, is also in the North Dakota National Guard. She applied for the job, was selected. So guess what? I guess we're sticking around Africa for a little while. I need something to do. But before I came out of that job, one of the advisors from the Security Force Assistance Brigade, the SFAB, said, hey, we're looking for a liaison to help us out underneath Special Operations, SOCAF, Special Operations Command Africa, to work down here in West Africa to kind of run our flintlock program with the exercise. And I was like, sounds like a good deal. I need a job. Turned out to be a sweet assignment. Did a lot of stuff. We ran all over God's green earth down there in West Africa doing some stuff. And those that don't know, flintlock is essentially AFRICOM's premier and largest annual special operations forces exercise. And it works with a lot of Africa partner nations, a lot of NATO allies. So it was, again, it was just between the BAO experience, working with like Department of State and all those other agencies, and then working this in the world of exercises, it really opened up my aperture of what, you know, we do outside of the standard stuff in the DOD. But talk about a fish out of water. You know, I was out there running around with Green Berets, running it, just doing awesome stuff. A great group of people, very humble, awesome to work with. I'm glad I did that. So essentially coming out of that job, I applied for the State Partnership Program Director position. Lieutenant Colonel Mark McEvers retired. Did it for almost 8 years, so huge shoes to fill, but had a pretty good idea on kind of how to at least get started with the job. And still trying to fill those shoes, but it's been great. I came into that job last October. And it's been great. And then went into a battalion command on the M-Day side at the RTI with the 1st Engineer Training Battalion. So that's 25 years in one breath.
Yeah. So I definitely want to talk about the state partnership, but there's a couple things you mentioned that I want to go way back in time. So I know Kosovo at one point was like the most mined countries in the world, especially in Europe. So you said you went there as like, you know, a junior enlisted member, and that was your job. So what was it you were doing there?
Oh man, so it's kind of wild. So we kind of worked at the joint, there's a multinational joint force headquarters mission up there. So the Mine Action Center essentially was this node where we would track and facilitate any responses. So any of the maneuver folks that were out there on patrols, one, they would come across them because farmers would literally just dig these things up and set them on the side of the road and they'd call them in. So we worked really like hand in hand with EOD. And then I got to go on a lot of those ride alongs. It was super sweet watching like these cool robots rolling out there, and they're defeating these things on the spot, which is sweet. And if we couldn't defeat them on the spot because of like a local populace, we'd bring them back. And every other week we'd do like a essentially a demo rodeo and just blast some awesome charges. So it was pretty gnarly. There was a ton of anti-personnel, which is sad. That was affecting folks. A few anti-tank, but yeah, that place was littered.
Yeah, so that's definitely, you know, going in as a combat engineer, getting to do deployment to coastal and getting to do your job, that must have been just extremely fulfilling and like I'm doing something.
Yeah, yeah, it was great. Again, you know, it was Kosovo, ebbs and flows with busyness and stuff, but that was also the same year they had the riots where essentially they had to shut that place down. So it was a pretty busy year we were there. And working with the Red Bull, the guys were there, 35D were great. So again, getting kind of, that was my first experience of working outside the North Dakota Guard to where I was like, hey, there is more outside the borders of the Guard. Great as it is, you know, there's stuff out there.
So then you came back and then you got the gig. Let's move forward a little bit to ROTC.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you talk about being behind enemy lines, a little bit of a rivalry there.
Yeah.
But being able to do a program and then go back and instruct a very similar program within the same guidelines, like, what was that like, and did you, like, see yourself as, hey, that was me a decade ago?
Yeah, it kind of rewound the clock a little bit because, you know, you wanted to, you know, you were a cadet at one point. That was fun. You had fun. College rocks, all that cool stuff. But it was really cool to take kind of my experiences and help those guys learn. And, like, you're molding, you know, the minds of the future of this leadership. So it was really rewarding. Again, kind of in that TRADOC space. The education, kind of doing all the instructor getting qualified in that space was really great. So, yeah, just, again, one of those kind of crazy broad strokes assignment that fell on my lap.
All right, so if we want to transition and talk about the state partnership program, you know, some people, especially in the Guard, know what it is. Maybe they've done a trip.
Yep.
We've been partnered with, you know, Ghana, Togo, Benin, 20 years with Ghana, 10 years with the other two as well. So, take us through what exactly is the state partnership program.
Good question. Get it a lot. So let's start from the beginning. The beginning is always a good place to start. So the SPP, it started as a program to assist countries essentially emerging from behind the Iron Curtain when we were kind of coming out of that Cold War era. So a lot of those states needed assistance. Plus, you got to kind of strike while the iron's hot. So we needed to help those countries build capacity so they could essentially build their forces and be able to defend themselves. So today, the SPP, State Partnership Program, involves more than 50% of the world's countries, paired with the National Guard of every U.S. state and territory. So in total, there's 115 partner nations worldwide. So I think we just hit our 30-year mark, which is impressive that the program has grown that fast over that long of time. So. The other thing I also like to mention is that out of the DoD budget, like the SPP program is only 1% of that. And out of that 1%, we execute up to 30% of security cooperation activities. And then, so a lot of people go, that's great, but what's security cooperation? And essentially two words kind of sum that up, soft power. But, you know, essentially the core idea behind security cooperation, which SPP is a part of, is to support the objectives of the United States and then the geographic combatant commands. So in our case, that's AFRICOM. And then we help them develop enduring relationships with their partner countries, carry out activities to build partner capacity, you improve interoperability, and then, and most importantly, in my opinion, you enhance U.S. access and influence. So, and that's under like a multitude of different Title 10, which is DoD, and Title 22, which is Department of State authorities, to include like foreign military sales, defense support to civil authorities. To those guys, when they go down to these army schools and they see a foreign student there, that's underneath the IMET program, which is the International Military Education Training Program. So lots of big things underneath that umbrella, which SPP is part of.
So you referenced it a little bit too about, you know, talk about global landscape. It's always moving, it's shifting.
Yep.
So how does the state partnership like recognize that and play into like, okay, this is how we want to maneuver within that space?
Yeah. So change, I mean, all caps for FY25, that's kind of the theme. Lots going on. Like anything, we adapt, we overcome. Fortunately, I get great guidance from the boss, Brigadier General Johnson, who's the tag. It's his program. So he helps kind of put some left and right limits in with that. The NGB is constantly putting out guidance and helping us on how to adapt and react to different changing environments. And then lastly, we always work with like AFRICOM because they're a combatant command, and working underneath the campaign plans and the different objectives that they have kind of help, I guess, help us shoot an azimuth to make sure we're doing the right things, what we need to be doing, to include like just talking points when we're talking to partners and what we can and cannot say. So, but reading all that stuff over, you know, the strategic documents, the national defense strategy, the embassies have a thing called an integrated country strategy. So all that has to nest together with our plan. So from my office, I have to put together, it's called a partnership support plan for each country. And that all has to nest with all those documents. But Africa's hard. It's constantly evolving on every level. And like you said, particularly the geopolitical side.
Yep. So when we talk about our partners too, Ghana, Togo, Benin, how did we get those partners established? Like, what was the process for that? Like, why were we partnered with those countries? And like, what factors will go into picking a partner for our state?
Yeah, good question. So I don't know all the pieces that played into it back in 2004, but that's when Ghana became our partner in 2004, and then Togo and Benin in 2014. So last year we actually celebrated our 10 and 20 year anniversary. We are unique though, because we have one of the only regional partnerships in the world, because if you don't know your geography, Ghana, Togo, and Benin all border each other. I actually had to look that up when I got the job. I wasn't sure myself, so I'll be honest. Over the horizon goals for me is to explore other partnerships underneath other COCOMs. So if we do want to look at a potential partner, I'm looking at something outside of AFRICOM to kind of leverage other assets that we have. But we're a small force, as you're aware. We only have so much bandwidth, so we have to be very deliberate when we're looking at this. The NGB manages the process, and then they'll publish countries that are looking for partners. And then we have to kind of match what capabilities that the partners are looking for. And then, for example, PACOM right now, with all the island networks, they're looking for partners left and right. But the big thing for those guys is that, you know, they're looking for a maritime capability. And like the last time I checked, we don't have a lot of that.
Yeah, landlocked state. We do a lot in Missouri, but it's still not quite the same.
Right.
So when we look at the state partnership program as well, obviously the North Dakota National Guard does a lot of heavy lifting in those partnerships, but it's not just strictly military to military. There's a lot more that goes into it and a lot of other partners that get involved. We talk about things like, you know, disaster response, public health, civilian affairs. Like, so who are some of the partners from North Dakota that help out and assist with those sorts of things and with our partner countries?
Yeah, so again, kind of going back to the whole relationship thing, that like that's ultimately the goal, but how we accomplish that is through engagement. So historically we've done mostly mill to mill, which is, you know, green suit to green suit. But we've also been making great strides in working defense support to civil agencies. So mostly in disaster prevention and response, i.e. incident command that we do with DOM ops and all that fun stuff. So I'm literally getting on a plane tomorrow to Ghana with the folks from the 81st CST to conduct a hazmat engagement with the Ghana National Fire Service. So it's not all military to military activities.
Yep, so the CST, our civil support team, dealing a lot with chemical, biological, nuclear, things like that. Definitely, it's the 301 course that they're going to be teaching out there and going through.
Yeah, so we were out there earlier this year. We did we've been there before. We've done some hazmat stuff, but we had to kind of bring it back. So it's going to be kind of more, this is a two-week engagement versus a one-week where we not just do the academic piece in the classroom, but then we're going to go out and actually do some practicals in the field. In addition to looking and kind of doing a capabilities assessment with some of their labs and kind of how they do business on that side. So it'll be kind of a first of first and a great thing to get into.
All right, so we're talking about the hazmat course, but what are some of the other activities that take place within state partnership program with North Dakota? You know, talking about joint training, knowledge sharing, equipment support. I know our RTI from, you know, Camp Grafton is heavily involved with a lot in the country. So what are some of the things we do with those?
Yeah, so all the above and hopefully more in the near future is what we're getting into. Again, being And the state, great on them. So they kind of one hand with the other said, hey, let's put Colonel Simic into the RTI position as the First Engineer Training Battalion commander, because the RTI supports probably a third of our portfolio with all the different engineer engagements. So it made a lot of sense for me to be up there and help working with that. So that's been really good. So that's a lot of our bread and butter, especially on the combat side and also the horizontal. I'd like to get into more vertical if we can going forward. On the counter IED stuff, super relevant because I actually have a team leaving on Saturday, three packs going out there. The Benoit, who are the forces out there. So again, a little history. The northern border up there is just littered with violent extremist organizations. The Sahel used to kind of be the firebreak of a lot of those VOs, but now they're kind of pushing more into coastal West Africa. So the partners are actually taking real hits as far as IEDs, V-bids, all that stuff. So they're screaming for help. We're trying to help as much as we can. So we have a team coming next week to conduct that counter IED event, which is great. In addition to that, historically we've done the medical, tons of stuff with like medical readiness exercises with the folks. This year I sent some nurses up to Garmisch, Germany for a workshop. So it's not just Africa with SBP. There's other opportunities outside of some conferences. I'm sending a chaplain group out to Ghana in a couple weeks to help them build their program of instruction at their school that they got established. NCO development is probably another place where we shine. We have such strong senior NCOs in this organization that they're just sweeping the floor with other states with some of this stuff. And to include, we're writing some of the assessments that AFRICOM is using. So huge testament to our senior level NCOs on the NCO development side. The band gets out there. We're exploring more cyber and ISR with like the Air Guard. They actually supported Africa Line this year with intel, surveillance, reconnaissance, academics, and training. So that's good. And then on the cyber side, and then we're also for new for 26, we're going to start looking at doing some counter drug.
Okay. So basically, it sounds like almost every aspect of North Dakota National Guard for every MOS could be involved one way or the other in some sort of capacity with our partners.
Yeah, I'd say we've leveraged and took advantage of almost every, you know, skill level at that level, like individual that we can. But tactics change, doctrine changes. So there's always a demand signal for something for that. But again, at the end of the day, it's all about that relationship that we're creating with those partners.
So when we talk about that relationship building, is there any, you spent a lot of time in Africa with our partners, of just those enduring relationships on a personal level, you know, officer to officer, NCO to NCO, where they just keep coming back and stay in touch and want to develop with one another?
Yeah. So that's probably one of the most rewarding things is you conduct an engagement. They usually have like some, you know, team building activities where, hey, let's play a football match, non-American football, soccer. But go out for dinner, they do all that stuff, and it's great because I'll usually come to the opening and closing ceremonies. They're exchanging numbers, emails, having a great time, and they still keep in touch, and it's great. Even when some Ghanaians come to the States to visit, they'll link up with some of the soldiers we had over there, and that just does so much for the program, and it just builds that trust and in us and what the North Dakota Guard does over there. And it's funny, too, because when we go over there, you'll see, you know, the straight patch, or the straight arrows patch on uniforms. So it's awesome. And then when other DOD folks go there from other components, they're like, North Dakota Guard? They're like, no. Why does everyone keep talking about North Dakota? So we've made a huge impact. And that's the thing that gives us a huge advantage versus like Compa 1 is that we're a familiar face. We have the continuity. We're an enduring program. And that's just one of the huge benefits of the state partnership program.
So, in previously serving as the bilateral affairs officer for Africa Command, and you know, in the U.S. Embassy in Ghana, what would you say are some pretty successful state partnership program, you know, activities that you've seen there that you're involved with, and like, how do we see impact from those resonating?
Yeah. So, man, I tell you, the one that comes to mind, and it was a blast, ton of work. It was in 2022, so we worked with this is in Ghana, in NADMO, which is the National Defense Management Office. Natural Disaster Management Office. So kind of equivalent to our FEMO. It was an earthquake exercise called Shikpan Wosamo. I think I got that right. It's Ga is the local language, but translates to like shaky earth. We called it shake and bake. Inside joke. But this fell under our disaster preparedness response portfolio, which we call Lignite Coast. So we do Lignite Coast across all three countries. But in this case, it was in Ghana, but Ghana, Togo, and Benin all have three major fault lines that run through it. So it's kind of a ticking clock and something, you know, it's like it's not a matter of if, it's kind of when. So they take it very, very serious. And the other cool thing with that is being it's a regional problem because disasters don't stop at borders. We're getting Togolese and Benoit to Ghana events, vice versa. So they're doing this like joint effort to respond to that stuff. So it's really cool. But in this event, man, we had so many stakeholders, agencies involved. It was like a Herculean effort. But we had NADMO, National Fire Service, ambulance, police. We had the like Volta River authorities, huge lift. I think we had 14 folks from the Northern National Guard come down there that were kind of residential experts in incident command. We had a team from Department of Emergency Services. So again, it's not just all military, it's civilian in there as well. But yeah, it was great. And it was a huge success. It was a 2-week event. We simulated an earthquake. We did some decon stuff. We did patient litter transfer and all that stuff. So it was a huge event and it like went worldwide. So, and the cool thing about that is to include NADMO, like talking to those guys, they included a lot of our DOMOPS TTPs into their own national disaster prevention response plans, which is really rewarding.
Yeah, so when we talk about responding to natural disasters, you know, right here on Frame Barracks, we share some space with the Department of Emergency Services of North Dakota, and they do a phenomenal job at this training. So what's it like seeing the parallels of, you know, things that their partner countries take away from that, or just some of the training they do and how they incorporate that? Because you said some of the tactics, techniques, and procedures, yep, they incorporate that. So what are some of those things?
Yeah, so, and you got to be careful. So you don't want to change their plan. And again, kind of going back to, like, being sensitive cultures and stuff. So we're not there to change their plan. We're there to take their plan, dust it off. We want to break it tactfully. And kind of see where they need help with that. And then we just want to make their plan better because everything we do here doesn't always work over there. The big thing in the, you know, the struggle is that, hey, they just don't have the funds and the technology like we do. And that's kind of one of the big gripes is like, hey, we don't want to bring all our fancy toys over there, use them, and then we take them back because that doesn't help them for real response. So some of the big stuff, you know, that they're incorporating. So when we just did our fire hazmat training earlier this year, we brought over some PPE, stuff from just like boots to ladders to protective equipment, how to, and some of this stuff is like not just how to use it, but how do you sustain and maintain the equipment. It's important we do the new equipment training, but we also got to show them, hey, this is how you also sustain and maintain it.
Absolutely. So one of the things we can look at too is, how does a state partnership program, you know, benefit North Dakota and the North Dakota National Guard? So what do our soldiers and airmen like gain out of those partnerships and relationships?
Sure. So I kind of alluded to it earlier, but it's definitely made an impact at the individual level for folks who want to do more with the North Dakota National Guard outside of its borders. I know it's one of the TAG's priorities to kind of be more outside facing with opportunities for our airmen and soldiers. And, you know, the SPP program provides that opportunity. There's a ton of work that goes into it, but man, it's a lot of fun for me and these folks that go over there. And again, it's really cool seeing these guardsmen coming home with lifelong friends and staying in touch. Like I said, exchanging numbers and doing all that good stuff. So you go over there and you see them with their guard shirts on and the straight arrow patches, like that really resonates with these guys. I'm like, wow, we're actually making a difference and they really appreciate us. So that's really rewarding. So yeah, but it's hilarious though when like the infantry guys go over there from active duty and they're like, North Dakota Guard. They're like, no, sorry.
And they're like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't understand your program. Like,
why is North Dakota keep coming up?
So we talk about, you know, going to our partner countries, but they also come here for different events. One of our most prominent ones is probably the Best Warrior Competition.
Yeah.
You know, and they come over. So how do our partner nation, you know, personnel come to North Dakota? And do you have any other examples of that and things where they really excel at?
Yeah, so the Best Warrior program is probably the most exciting and program that I'd say we do when we call them a FAM or familiarization event we bring over here. I'd say outside of that, we have we do schoolhouse visits with the RTI where we bring a lot of their engineer training school folks over to come see some of that. And then also we got some executive level visits where we brought in ambassadors to North Dakota. Most recently, Ambassador Fitzsimmons from Togo came over. I think that was during one of the state's leadership summits that she was a keynote speaker. But by mile, Best Warrior is the fun one, the cool one. 3 years ago, we started that. And man, these guys just smoked everyone. And like, not every event, but like anything with like endurance, like physical training events. So that was fun to see. Last year we got Benin over here, and then this year the goal, actually, well, next month already, is to get Togo over here. So we're actually going to get all three partners for the first time to North Dakota, competed in the Best Warrior Competition. And then the feedback was like, hey, this is fun, but we don't really win anything because they can't go compete at regionals or anything like that. So we're going to start like an Africa Cup, kind of a traveling trophy for them to compete, which will create a lot of competition inside that realm. So I think that'll be really fun. So looking forward to getting those guys over here.
Yeah, I remember last year watching it. The woman that came and competed, she was almost an Olympian.
Yes.
And it was just like, okay, like, all right, she's probably going to be, but we didn't know that until after she started running. We're like, oh, she is by far just a phenomenal athlete. And it just blew our mind.
And they're super humble too. But you got to remember though, they're sending like their elites from their like from Ghana, they're coming from the Army Special Operations Brigade. So these guys they're not just sending anybody over here. I wouldn't either.
Yeah. No, but it was just wild to see that. And it's just, everybody was super impressed and just like giving them rounds of applause for like, yep, you won this event. Like you just destroyed the event. It was just wild to see.
Yeah. So maybe it's a good thing they're not competing against Americans in that.
So looking forward, what are some of the areas you'd like to see the state partnership go to now that like you're in the director role? You know, Colonel McEvers did a phenomenal job and like, just crushed it.
Yep.
But where do you see us growing or evolving or taking on, you know, additional, you know, objectives within that?
Yeah. So we're in, I mean, you know, this, everyone knows this, we're in a resource constrained environment. So it's tough to get too ambitious right now. But the goal really for me is to educate the force, the North Dakota Guard, because I don't think, everyone exactly knows what this is. And what it can be or who can do it exactly. So I think that's important for me as a near-term goal is to kind of educate the force. Expanding our topics and our portfolio with some of the different capabilities and tools and equipment that we have here at the state that we haven't had in the past. And then working to get more Air Guard activities to include the UAS space and ISR. Talked a little about counter drug. That'll be a new event if we can get that off in 26. And then trying to take advantage of the exercise opportunities in West Africa. Africa Lion, Flintlock, and Obagami Express are the three main exercises. The tough part with exercises, though, is that we have to forecast quite a ways out with the units to get them on like an RTIMS line and all that fun stuff. So sometimes we don't have all the information. So we're trying to figure out a way to clean that up so we can get not just onesie twosies like small teams over there, but we want to get over like company size elements and do some really cool stuff. So the exercise stuff is what I'm looking at too and trying to clean that up and get better at that. And then we kind of talked about it too, but and just looking at a potential partnership with another country if you know the opportunity is appropriate.
So something you talked about too is, you know, getting the word out, talking to soldiers and airmen in the Guard of opportunities for that. So what advice would you give to, you know, a guardsman in North Dakota that might be interested in getting involved in the state partnership program? Either like we could talk about officer position being stationed there because that's something you did very familiar with, but also just those training exercises, the 1 week, the 2 week, or the larger Flintlock African Lion. Like, what would you say to a traditional guardsman that's working that 1 weekend a month?
Yeah. So the big thing, and I always tell people this, is that you got to let your leadership know that you're interested. I talked with a few like the battalion OICs, essentially kind of building a bench, SPP bench, of those that are interested. So that's half the problem, is just identifying a group that can go, because you're not just going down the road, you're going overseas. International travel is not simple. And then also you got to compete with your civilian employment. So there's just a lot of factors that go into that. But I've had like E4 Joe Snuffy just reach out and call me and say like, hey, I'm in. But it doesn't work like that. It's called a chain of command. So typically, I'll reach out to the unit OICs and inform them, and they'll kind of farm it out, put it out in a Frago to see who's interested. So, and again, that's part of like the speaking of education and kind of just getting the word out. I will be at the Commander's First Sergeant course next month. So kind of using that platform as another way to kind of educate those decision makers. Because you got to remember, I'm competing against annual training, Army schools, PME, you know, readiness, all that stuff. So I understand like SPP is not always going to be the priority in some of those cases for those folks. And then they know the soldiers better than I do. Because again, we're not just going to send anybody overseas, you know, because we do live in a bit of a bubble up here. So it's good to have a little bit of experience before we just send anyone.
So we're talking about those engagements going over for, you know, a short period of time. But when you look at those permanent positions over there where you're doing like 2-3 years at a time, what are you looking for someone to do that? Like, what's the process to get someone over in one of those positions? And why is it so important to have someone that's going to be a workhorse while they're there?
Yeah, well, workhorse, you said it. So good question, and a good time to plug the bilateral affairs officer position. So when you're over there, it's unique because you're going to be in a different environment that you've never been in. You know, it's not AT. You're going to be working at a U.S. embassy. You're going to be working with foreign area officers, which is actually a specialty branch, which I had no idea about before I got over there. It's like the best kept secret in the Army. But you're working in a diplomatic environment, so with multiple agencies. So again, when I applied for the job, I think I knew maybe a third of going into it, but you get some training. We don't get any of the formal language training. Thankfully, Ghana is Anglophone, English. Togo and Benin, that is Francophone, where it's French. So that is a bit of a challenge for those folks, but we have some tools in place for those folks that go over there. But we do want, you know, that senior 03, 04, that's kind of well-versed, good staff time, very comfortable being a, you know, independent thinker, making decisions, because you're on an island over there. But like I said, it's one of the most rewarding, challenging, everything, you know, above, all the above assignment when we're talking broadening for folks. So I strongly encourage anyone that is interested or has, you know, wants to be looking at potentially filling that billet down the road, because the program's not going anywhere. Just for everyone's knowledge, though, the Ghana is a Army billet, and then Togo and Benin are the air billets. So there's talk of potentially being able to make them universal and we can swap them in and out, but as of right now, that's how it's coded.
So what made you want to take that position? You said you were told about it and it was said that, but what was that decision of like, all right, I want to do this, and what kept you there?
So kind of funny story. I knew about the position, and, you know, don't tempt me with a good time. I love a good time. I like a good adventure. So when I was asked about it, I was like, okay, let's see. I'll think about it. Because it was only, at the time, it was only a 2-year to up to 2.5-year assignment. And I'm like, you know, I don't know if the juice is worth the squeeze. Like, you're literally uprooting your whole life, pulling your kids out of school, doing all that. I'm like, well, hold on. They're like, the previous BAO, or the one that's there now, she's been there 4 or 5 years. I was like, how'd that work? So again, there are two previous guardsmen married there for 5 years, 4 or 5 years. And I was like, oh, okay, that might make, you know, juice worth the squeeze if we're there that long. And we ended up being that long. So it was great. And again, I as far as just a broadening assignment, the experience you got, and just all the different culture, it was just amazing. And I'm glad to still be a part of it as the program director.
So then you talked about, you know, previously a married couple there, but now your wife, Major Beth Simic, is serving overseas. And how did you navigate like that demand? Because now you're back here as a as the director, and she's there, you know, still performing the role, waiting for someone to come back for that position. So how do you make all that work? Because we talk a lot about, you know, dual military spouses. Yeah. So how do you make that workload happen?
I mean, doing it a while, you know, you kind of build up a little scar tissue from it. But it doesn't get easier. I know that, especially when you throw some kids in the mix. But it's a tough one, you know, especially with dual service under one roof. Good days, bad days. But, you know, we were extremely fortunate to have been in West Africa for almost 5 years. And it's actually some of the most time we spent together as a family, to be honest. And then I have a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old now. And, like, I can't tell you how much they've grown up and just matured on a international stage with, like, so much exposure to culture, amazing friendships from schoolmates, just getting to see different parts of the world. So that part was great. And they all get back from Ghana next weekend, and I couldn't be more excited to have some roommates again and get everybody home.
Are they looking forward to coming back and experiencing North Dakota winters again?
Yes. Yeah. So I came back in October, and it was kind of tough. I had to acclimate, but I put on some layers, I guess maybe we'll call it, but they'll be all right. But again, but like the beauty of it in this position is that, you know, I still get to keep tabs with my colleagues and my friends over there, and I get to see them from time to time with SPP engagements. So I call it Africa Light. And then also seeing some of your initiatives that, like, I started 4 years ago come to fruition is also rewarding. So super grateful to the North Dakota National Guard for the opportunity. And again, I strongly encourage, like, those guardsmen listening out there that who are looking for an adventure of a lifetime to apply for these positions. No regrets.
So as we're wrapping things up, if there was something about the state partnership program, you know, in general, or just with our partners or here in North Dakota, the people listening, what would you want people to just really take away from the program?
To take away from the program, I would say that this is probably one of the most unique programs in the, I'd say, in the arsenal of tools for training that the National Guard has nationwide. You're not going to see stuff like this stateside. And that's the reason why we sign up. We want to go see the world. We want to go experience things. I think cutting bamboo in half and stuffing it with plastic explosives and cutting wire with it, making, you know, hasty Bangalore torpedoes is a lot cooler than setting up a GP medium in Camp South. No offense, Camp South, but it just is. So I think that's the thing to take away, is that you're going to do something so unique, something so different outside of the normal, I don't want to call it a grind, but from your typical, you know, drill weekend. And we're conscious too, and it's not lost on me that it takes a lot of time to get over there, but, you know, 1 week isn't too crazy to go do something like this. But and then the other thing too is, I guarantee you, you're going to leave there with a phone number, a friend that you're going to keep in touch with. And then even far after you get out of the Guard, like, these folks are still staying in touch. And I can't tell you, it's just a great feeling.
All right. Hey, perfect. Thank you. I think we're going to wrap it up with there today. So thank you so much for joining us today, Colonel Simic. Hopefully listeners out there were able to learn a couple things about the State Partnership Program. If you want to learn more about the North Dakota National Guard State Partnership Program, make sure to follow us on the North Dakota National Guard Facebook, Instagram, X, LinkedIn, or YouTube. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.